You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Boulder Weekly, read by Bill Bass. Today we will be reading the following main articles. BOCO briefly. Pearl Street gets back to business after June 1st attack. Music. The yin and yang of Amethyst Kaya. On drugs. World's largest psychedelic conference will bring estimated 7,000 to Denver. And following up with miscellaneous articles. BOCO briefly. Your local news at a glance. By Boulder Weekly staff. Pearl Street gets back to business after attack. It's been just over a week since the attack on Run for Their Lives demonstrators on Pearl Street. There are shoppers and walkers strolling the bricks and diners eating al fresco in the early summer sunshine. I'm so happy to see that it's back to normal, said Avner Galati, owner of Falafel King, whose business of 45 years is right across the mall from the site of the incident. A week later, totally back to normal. It's a far cry from the evacuated closed-down blocks in the wake of the June 1st violence. Sanjay Nazir was dishing up dumplings at Shiri's Momo Delight when he saw flames go up after a man reportedly threw two Molotov cocktails into the group advocating for the release of Israeli hostages taken by Hamas on October 7, 2023. Nazir immediately ran to the scene in front of the courthouse with a water jug in hand to help those who had been burned. I'm a human. Anybody will do it, he said. I'm not like a hero or something. That's what we do. We are part of this community. Here we make great business. Here we love Boulder. Shiri's didn't reopen until the Tuesday after the attack. Everything was here, Nazir, who co-owns the dumpling cart, said. We lost business, merchandise. Food was spoiled. Pearl Street's return to normalcy took time, business owner said. It's just a wide range of emotions, said Chance Craigle, Peppercorn VP. I mean, some people came in like nothing ever happened. Other people, I had various employees have to take multiple days off of that entire first week. I think there was a balance of fear, frustration, and ambivalence as well. It was just this big shock and awe, and then everyone just kind of go back to normal as best as you can. Lindsay Shaw, owner of Lindsay's Deli, said she and other restaurant owners saw a slow week following the attack. A lot of us were down, business-wise, this past week, Shaw said, after coming from a meeting with the Coalition of Restaurant Owners. And we were wondering, was it what happened on Sunday? But was it also weather? Was it also the beginning of tour season? So we couldn't really pinpoint what it was. Although business is picking back up this week along with the weather, Shaw said she and other restaurant owners from the coalition want to see an increased police presence on the mall for people to feel safer. Shaw, who is Jewish, said she attended the Jewish festival on Pearl Street over the weekend, which saw a turnout of thousands of people exactly a week after the attack. There were SWAT teams. There was so much protection and security here, Shaw said. You felt really safe. But it also felt slightly bizarre because you just aren't used to seeing SWAT teams on the mall. The JCC announced ahead of the festival that the event would be reimagined to center Run for Their Lives and bring increased awareness to the hostages still held in Gaza while making space to recognize the survivors of Sunday's attack. Of the 251 hostages taken, 58 are still being held, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Some 1,195 Israelis were killed. Israel's subsequent military campaign has killed 54,084 Palestinians as of May 28th. Falafel King's Galati, who is from Israel and sometimes joined the Run for Their Lives demonstrators, said his shop was overwhelmed during the festival. As a Jewish business owner, Shaw said she's feeling especially supported. Jewish people in particular, just because this is my community, have been super supportive of the business, she said. They've been reaching out. They've been trying to shop here. They've been looking out, you know, wondering how I was doing, and so that's been just kind of an interesting piece of it to watch that community come together. The attacker, Mohammed Salaman, now faces over 100 charges, including attempted murder, assault, and a federal hate crime. A preliminary hearing is set for July 15th. Northern Water finds uranium at Chimney Hollow Reservoir. Northern Water has discovered uranium-bearing minerals in the early phases of water testing at Chimney Hollow Reservoir, a project west of Carter Lake in Larimer County. The project, which will store a maximum of 90,000 acre-feet for the Windy Gap project that supplies water to Boulder, Broomfield, Larimer, and Weld County, is set to begin filling operations in August, a process expected to be completed in 2027, though these plans could change based on what further testing shows and what mitigation measures make the most sense. Northern Water Public Information Officer Jeff Stolliff said in an email response to questions, "Uranium is found in some of Colorado's geology. At Chimney Hollow, it is naturally occurring in the granitic rock formations that were quarried to supply material for the dam," according to a June 5th press release from Northern Water. As the reservoir fills, these rocks will be in direct contact with water, leading to the leaching of uranium into the water, which the Conservancy District will closely monitor during filling operations, but expects to decrease over time. The maximum amount of uranium permissible in drinking water by the EPA is 30 micrograms per liter. Northern Water is conducting tests and modeling what the extent of the uranium leaching could look like as they begin filling it. Tests will continue over the next several years while Northern Water pursues mitigation strategies, which can include treatment or reduction through significant dilution, according to Stala. No water will be released from the reservoir until further assessments are completed. In other news, the U.S. Forest Service approved the St. Vrain Forest Health Project, a plan to conduct forest management across 43,000 acres of national forest west of Lyons. The plan, which has been in development for 4 years, includes thinning and prescribed burns throughout the area to fortify the St. Vrain watershed against wildfire. Safeway and Albertsons workers in 14 cities across Colorado, including Boulder, Broomfield, and Metro Denver, voted to authorize a strike against unfair labor practices. No start date has been officially announced, but some media outlets have reported that the work stoppages could begin as soon as this Sunday. UFCW Local 7 workers' union contracts expired in January after months of negotiations, leading to a 2-week King Soopers worker strike in February. There's a photograph accompanying this section showing Shiri's Momo Delight food truck. It's a red truck. It says Shiri's Momo Delight. There are several condiments on a shelf outside of the ordering window and a few photographs of the menu. and two gentlemen standing out front, and the caption reads, Sanjay Nazir Left, who co-owns Shiri's Momo Delight on Pearl Street Mall, rushed to help those burned in the June 1st attack. Credit Kaylee Harder. In music, Be Here Now, The Yin and Yang of Amethyst Kaya by Justin Criado. Taking a moment to dive inside the mind of Amethyst Kaya reveals an odd inner world where ancient Eastern philosophies and cosmic horror casually commingle. It's a world where the old Appalachian gods and Lao Tzu converse in a way that makes perfect sense to the Southern singer-songwriter. After hearing her explain the machinations behind her latest album, Steel Plus Bright, released just before Halloween last year by a legendary folk label, Rounder Records, these unlikely pairings seem more harmonious than first blush may suggest. Kaya, 38, is relaxing at her home in Johnson City, Tennessee, only weeks before her upcoming tour kicks off in Colorado with back-to-back shows in Boulder and Fort Collins. She's going through the track list of her fourth full-length, explaining in depth how her reinvigorated interest in meditation, and by extension Zen Buddhism and Tzu's Taoism, shaped her overall vision for the record. I had tapped into meditation a little bit during 2020, she says. But as life got busier and crazier, I sort of became disconnected from a spiritual path simply because I was really focused on making money, paying bills, being able to help out with my dad, buying a house, and doing all these different things. After breakout album, Wary Plus Strange, which featured Grammy-nominated single Black Myself, and landed on Rolling Stone's 25 Best Country and Americana Albums in 2021, Kaya felt the need to seize the onslaught of opportunities. She said yes to pretty much everything, as she puts it, but that proved to be unsustainable long term. It was like, this is my shot, this is it, all eyes are on me. Kaya, who is also a member of the banjo quartet, Our Native Daughters, explains, I put myself back into a rat race mentality. I found myself comparing myself a lot to other artists and judging where I was materially versus where other artists were. There's a tendency to try to climb the ladder, whatever that ladder may be. I realized I just needed to take some time to slow down. All we have is now. So Kaya downloaded some meditation apps and read books about centering oneself among the chaos of everyday life. She took in Tzu's Tao Te Ching, long considered the definitive text on Taoism, and studied similar works, including those of New Age Western philosopher Alan Watts. Learning to be able to live in the present as opposed to being lost in thoughts about the future and the past. That hasn't been easy all the time, but the more and more I exercise and practice that muscle, the more often I can stay in that space, she says. Understanding being in the present is so important because, as Alan Watts would say, all we have is now. The contemplation also allowed her to tap into other interests while working on Steel Plus Bright. That's where the Lovecraftian themes and Appalachia folklore come in. Kaya points to horror fiction podcast Old Gods of Appalachia and Netflix miniseries The Haunting of Bly Manor as two examples of her strange leanings. After all, she does consider herself a funny-talking, sci-fi-loving, queer black nerd. I wanted to re-embrace the things that brought me joy, alongside reconnecting with a spiritual path that really resonates with me, Kaya says. It was a celebration of being able to really have fun creating the songs and the record. Even though the album is called Still Plus Bright, and it's about finding joy in things, I find joy in the spooky, weird stuff. The Hero's Journey. The result is a blues-infused Southern Gothic Americana offering that proves Kaya is one of the most unique artists doing it right now. Just listen to the brooding ballad "God's Under the Mountain," about an eldritch deity pushing a person to self-sacrifice by plunging into the Nolichucky River, or the intergalactic void-crawling love song, "Dark Matter," and you'll start to understand. Exploring themes of injustice and oppression as well, Kaya offers a more optimistic point of view, though the news of the day is often more frightening than any monsters she can come up with. "It's the hero's journey of what it means when you're faced with adversity," she explains. "Whether it's a totalitarian regime or an evil deity trying to indoctrinate you, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to look to the people around you, who rally around you, to help you fight a cause bigger than yourself? I just love stories that resonate around that." Teaming up with Billy Strings, "I Will Not Go Down," Butch Walker, "Silk and Petals," S.G. Goodman, "Play God and Destroy the World," and Avi Kaplan, "Die Slowly Without Complaint," prove she's not fighting alone. Looking ahead, while that's not very zen, Kaya is about to jump back into the maelstrom of touring. But it's clear she's more ready than ever for what may unfold out there on the road. Meditating doesn't have to be sitting in one spot. On the bill, Amethyst Kaya with Ren Van, 8 p.m. Thursday, June 19th, Fox Theater, 1135 13th Street, Boulder, $30. This article is accompanied by two photographs. The first is the album cover of Still Plus Bright. It shows Amethyst Kaya standing among some plants. Appears to be a field. There's an orange background with a sun appearing in the back, type of a diamond shape around her, outlined. It says Amethyst Kaya at the top and Still Plus Bright at the bottom. She's wearing an orange jacket and looking towards her right. And the caption reads, "Still Plus Bright by Amethyst Kaya was released October 25th, 2024. Courtesy Rounder Records." The second photograph shows a picture of Amethyst Kaya sitting again in front of some greenery, some plants, with an orange background and a sun behind her. She's holding a kind of a dark red sunburst guitar. The guitar has some intricate inlay work on the neck. She's wearing a denim jacket with a dark shirt with white polka dots and a bolo tie. And the caption reads, "Singer-songwriter Amethyst Kaya straddles the line between mindfulness and music. Credit, Kevin and King." From On Drugs, Denver hosts largest psychedelic conference. First U.S. city to decriminalize psilocybin is ideal location, by Danny Douglas. When clients of licensed psychotherapist Carrie Kiki King partake in ketamine-assisted psychotherapy at the Oracle Institute in Tucson, Arizona, they arrive at the ranch-style property and are led inside to a dimly lit room. She brings the client to a 4-inch plush mat on the ground, surrounded by blankets and a bolster cushion. Prior to the start of the experience, King lights candles and plays the singing bowls. She starts a custom playlist for her client, hands them an eye shade, and pushes play on the machine emulating nature sounds. Under the influence of ketamine, a psychedelic used for mental health treatment since the 1970s, patients can feel more able to handle thoughts and feelings they struggle with in the sober light of day. But just as important as the sessions are what happens next in a process known as integration, wherein King guides her clients through reflecting on what happened while on the drug. Integration helps clients explore and implement insights, King said. This results in personal growth, emotional healing, and lasting change. As more Americans partake in therapeutic psychedelic experiences, bolstered by an expanding field of research and growing list of states granting access to these mostly illegal drugs, integration is an apt theme for Psychedelic Science 2025, being held June 16th through 20th at the Colorado Convention Center in downtown Denver. There is a lot for us to integrate right now, across disciplines and across communities, said Zane Bader, Communications Manager for Conference Host Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, MAPS. MAPS. This conference is not just about showcasing everything that's new, it's also about discussing how, as a movement, we can carry this work forward in responsible ways. A new era. MAPS spinoff, Lykos Therapeutics, received a lot of attention last year for its failed attempt to make MDMA a federally approved and regulated treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. But the organization's role in supporting and advancing the psychedelic space is much broader. MAPS International Therapist Education Program has trained more than 350 therapists in over 30 countries since 2023. The stakes are high, with millions of Americans struggling with their mental health. Mental Health America's 2024 report revealed that 23% of adults experienced a mental health illness in the past year, almost 60 million people. John Williamson, a Honolulu resident, began ketamine therapy earlier this year amid a lifelong struggle with depression. After January, the news environment became increasingly negative, and I experienced a decrease in social activities because of my recent retirement, Williamson wrote via email in response to questions. I sank into depression, and at that point, I thought it would be worthwhile to take a radically different approach and try ketamine. I'm glad I did. Since starting ketamine therapy, I've had more energy, been more productive, and felt more hopeful about the future. Williamson will also be attending the conference in Denver for the first time. He looks forward to interacting with others on a similar healing journey. Psychedelic Science 2025 seemed like the best place to access the latest information on these therapies, he wrote. I have long been interested in how psychedelic medicine can help me, people I care about, and our contemporary society with emotional and psychological challenges. Meeting the Movement. The event will be the largest conference in the world on consciousness-expanding substances, including psilocybin, LSD, MDMA, ayahuasca, and ibogaine. More than 7,000 people are expected to attend from all 50 U.S. states and 39 countries. There have been massive legislation shifts since the first conference in Oakland in 2017. As of May 2025, Oregon and Colorado are the only two states with regulated access to psychedelic therapy and healing centers. New Mexico allows growing psilocybin mushrooms, and 19 states have active legislation related to decriminalization, regulation, and medical oversight or licensure requirements. Six other states allow for medical research. Williamson said he is glad to see more states moving to dismantle the fear-based restrictions established during Richard Nixon's war on drugs, which long demonized psychedelics. MAPS Zane said honest, nuanced conversations are needed about the risk of psychedelic medicines, but it's just as important to acknowledge the risk of criminalization. Keeping them subject to prohibition where people can get incarcerated for possession, contributes to stigma. Danny Douglas is a Hawaii-based writer, editor, and communications professional. Psychedelic Science, 2025, Monday, June 16th to Friday, June 20th, Colorado Convention Center, 700 14th Street, Denver, $309 to $1,839. There is a photograph accompanying this article. It appears to be, the backdrop appears to be perhaps a poster showing three or four mushrooms growing in the background. It's rather colorful. The mushrooms are orange with a blue background, various shades of blue. And there's a gentleman standing in front of that. He's bearded with a cap on. And the caption reads, American mycologist Paul Stamets presents at Psychedelic Science 2023 in Denver. Credit, Danny Douglas. From the opinion section, spiritual bypassing, toxic positivity, how the Boulder Yoga Circuit indoctrinates indifference, by Erica Nunn. When I was 18, I found a website called backdoorjobs.com. I was about to graduate high school, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with my life. I knew college wasn't for me. When I came across the listing for Shoshone Yoga Retreat in Rollinsville, Colorado, I didn't know anything about ashrams or spiritual communities. I was drawn to the woman in the ad, eating an orange and smiling, and her seemingly overwhelming sense of peace. I applied for the work-study program and was accepted after a phone interview. Shoshone staff told me I just had to get to Netherland and they would take it from there. I made it to Netherland during a full-on blizzard where I was greeted by a woman named Tanya, or as she called herself, Shakti, a white woman from Florida and long-term resident of the retreat. Nothing extraordinarily traumatic happened during my first stay at Shoshone. I left and moved to Denver. After some years of baking and biking, doing LSD, climbing rooftops, making art I never shared, and swinging on swings in Cheeseman Park, I found myself considering going back to Shoshone. While I was in Denver, I stayed in contact with Faith Stone. When she asked if I would be interested in returning as staff, I agreed. I worked alongside a young white woman from Missouri who went by Tillock. She was almost imperceptibly hostile towards me. She would smile in my face, but I was always uncomfortable with her. I found her antagonistic and irritated by my presence. This was something I noticed in other staff and work-study participants as time went on. One of my most memorable moments with Tillock was when I walked into the communal kitchen while she was whistling and cleaning. When I asked her what song she was humming, she turned to me, smiled, and said, "A hanging song," and carried on with her sweeping. Around the same time, another staff member, a young white woman from Iowa called Veranane, was rapping some song with the N-word in it. I told Faith, who then informed the guru of Shoshone, her husband Jim. During the weekly satsang, a question-and-answer meditation, in response to the incident, Jim vaguely addressed what had occurred by saying, "People want to talk about race," taking a deep breath and concluding, "Just breathe." Places like Shoshone are where people go to feel better about doing nothing, where mostly excessively rich white people go to learn how to be comfortable being apolitical and apathetic. No one is saying having self-awareness is fun or easy. It's incredibly painful to be ripped from the familiarity of a reality that upholds you as the standard of all things good and great. How can you overturn a culture of violence if you refuse to accept you are the purveyor of a culture of violence? Slavery is white history more than it is black history. It tells the story of a group of people who have found colorful ways to maintain a genocide that has been ongoing for more than four centuries. Instead of lynchings, we have police shootings. Instead of plantations, we have private prisons. The world has its own karma, Jim would routinely claim. But do we not make up the world? Maybe we are not responsible for how it came to be, but are we not responsible for what it becomes? It is a luxury to opt out of political life, a luxury many of us cannot afford. Actively programming swaths of people into doing nothing to change the situation is irresponsible at best and predatory at worst. Just a few months ago, I went to their website and saw that my photograph was featured in a number of places. My picture was being used to create the optics of an empty solidarity and inclusion that was non-existent. I am writing this as a cautionary tale for young black African people emerging into adulthood who might get caught in this same trap. We are all looking for places to belong, for something bigger than ourselves, dignity, self-worth. My hope is that younger generations of Africans will avoid places like Shoshone Yoga Retreat, El Dorado Yoga Ashram, or Konalani Yoga Ashram, all of the Shambhava School of Yoga. I'm all for breathing and centering myself, so long as the plan doesn't stop there. Erica is an artist, writer, and thinker based out of the Northeast region. She is passionate about African cosmology and cats. Editor's note: in response to these allegations, Faith Stone wrote via email, "Shoshone has always been racially inclusive. We have made a huge effort to include, in particular, black people. Any racial prejudice is a fabric of Erica's imagination." In a second email, Shakti Wood wrote that Faith's initial email was not an official response. Wood wrote that she was not aware of issues between the author and members of staff, especially not related to race. As an organization, we are committed to personal and spiritual growth and hold inclusivity at the heart of our values. We hope that the opinion of one does not overshadow the experience of thousands who have come to Shoshone for peace and nourishment. This article is accompanied by a photograph. Several participants in Shoshone. From the left, a lady, long dark hair. Next to her is a gentleman wearing glasses. He's wearing a white shirt. There's a lady next to him. And then there is Erica Nunn, the author. And then to her right are two ladies. And there is a white, large white dog standing in front of them. And the caption reads, "Erica Nunn Center with other residents, employees, and work-study students in front of Shoshone's main temple shortly after she left the community for the second time. Courtesy, Erica Nunn." From the Nibbles section, the scoop on Lindsay's. Generations of ice cream lovers have found cool licks at Boulder Shop, by John Lindorf. Every day seems like Father's Day at Lindsay's Deli, according to owner Lindsay Shaw. For 21 years, she has watched the parade of bliss only produced by a lick of a favorite frozen flavor. "The kids who came in for a scoop with their dads when I first opened are now coming in with their kids," Shaw says. "A lot of them get the same flavor they've ordered for years." The original Häagen-Dazs shop opened in 1976 in the former Valentine's Hardware store when the Pearl Street Mall was being constructed. Lindsay's Deli holds the distinction of being the oldest operating Häagen-Dazs shop from the Mississippi and California. "I have ice cream in my blood," Shaw says with a wide grin, but she is not kidding. Her dad opened a Häagen-Dazs shop in Atlanta, and her pastry chef mom helped pioneer ice cream cakes for the company, she says. Ice cream calling. Shaw's summers and after-school hours were immersed in sundaes, banana splits, and hot fudge. I was giving out ice cream samples at 7 and scooped my first scoop at 12, she says. I swore that when I grew up, I would never work in the ice cream business. Shaw moved from the South to Colorado and earned a psychology degree from CU Boulder. She was looking forward to a career in teaching when ice cream came calling. My dad told me the Boulder Häagen-Dazs was available and that my brother and I should buy it, Shaw recalls. With the help of her family, Lindsay's Deli opened in 2004. From the start, Lindsay's was designed to be more than a summer-centric scoop shop. I wanted people to be able to sit and get something to eat, the proprietor says. We started out with 10 sandwiches and 3 soups using recipes from my mom. More than cones and cups. According to Shaw, the shop sells more than 2,000 sandwiches a week, but ice cream still rules. There are devout fans of Häagen-Dazs strawberry, coffee, and vanilla varieties, and there are new flavors available like blueberry lemon sorbet. However, the number one ice cream scooped at Lindsay's Deli is cookies and cream, according to Shaw. Through a recession, a flood, power outages, a pandemic, and a slew of ice cream competitors, Shaw has maintained her number one rule. Everybody who comes into the shop gets a free sample, even the mom who says, "I don't want anything." Shaw credits her father with being her guiding light. "My dad was my first mentor," she says. "He just really loves ice cream. He'd rather work at my store than his shop. If he walked in right now, he would have a grilled cheese with bacon and a bowl of half coffee, half Belgian double chocolate chip. The shop is gearing up for Father's Day on June 16th. Always a busy day here," Shaw says. The seasoned scooper believes ice cream has always been much more than just another sweet dessert. "People are coming in for an experience and a memory. They sit like kids together and take selfies with their ice cream to save that moment." There's an article inserted into this article. It says, "Taste of the Week, Real Matzo Ball Soup." New York born and raised in Atlanta, Shaw wanted to represent her Jewish roots at Lindsay's Deli through sandwiches and her family's matzo ball soup recipe. "One spoonful made me smile, because it tastes exactly like the traditional soup is supposed to taste, without any superfluous spices or toppings. The seasoned chicken broth is rich but not murky, with a healthy slick of chicken fat floating on top. The soup is thick with chunks and shreds of dark and white chicken meat and properly diced carrots, celery, and onions. The pièce de résistance is a large matzo ball dumpling that is spoon tender, not rubbery. This bowl of comfort has its own history since Boulder's most famous matzo ball soup was once served just up the block at the legendary New York Deli." The photograph under that article is a picture of the matzo ball soup in one bowl that is in the center, surrounded by much smaller bowls around that appear to be other flavors of soup. And the caption reads, "Matzo ball soup from Lindsay's Boulder Deli was the perfect meal for a rainy spring weekend. Courtesy, Lindsay's Boulder Deli." There are also 3 photographs accompanying the article. One shows a picture of Lindsay Shaw standing in front of a mural in her shop, and the caption, she's holding an ice cream cone, smiling with her right arm raised, and the caption reads, "Lindsay Shaw stands with a cone in front of a wall of family ice cream photos at Lindsay's Boulder Deli. Credit John Lindorf." 2 photographs below that show some sweet treats with a ribbon around them in one picture, And the second picture shows an arm reaching down to dip out of a tub of ice cream to fill a cone. And the caption reads, left, Lindsay Shaw's mother helped develop ice cream cakes for Häagen-Dazs. Right, Boulder's Häagen-Dazs shop has been scooping ice cream for nearly 50 years. Credits, John Lindorf. More from the Nibble section. Local food news. New Netherland Sushi. Ace Sushi opened recently in the market in Netherland, 60 Lakeview Drive. Happy anniversary to the Organic Sandwich Company. Opened 10 years ago by Marcy Miller with shops in Boulder and Louisville. Good news. Boulder Weekly's guide to Boulder County home bakers offering their goods for sale has two editions. Boulay Boulder, BouleyBoulder.com, and Penny's Pie Shop, HotPlate.com/pie. Complete local home bakery list, bit.ly/cottagebakeriesbw. Culinary Calendar, a Boulder beer legend. Historian Sam Bach offers a June 25th lecture with beer served at Denver's History Colorado Center. The author of Brewed at Altitude, A Beer Lover's History of Colorado, will highlight the essential role played by Boulder's homebrew and craft beer pioneer, Charlie Papazian. Tickets, historycolorado.org. Longtime Boulder herbalist Bridget Mars guides a June 15th walk through Lyons Food Forest at 315 5th Avenue. Information, bridgetmars.com. One of the cooler Colorado summer food experiences is Italian dinner movie night at Denver's award-winning Balestrieri Vineyards, July 25th, Bottle Shock, and July 26th, The Secret of Santa Vittoria. Tickets, balestrieriwine.com. Carnivore Alert, the Colorado Beef Challenge. A new tasting that pairs the state's best chefs and ranchers is August 9th in Denver. Tickets, ColoradoBeefChallenge.com. Words to chew on. Ice cream with Dad. I have the best memories as a kid eating ice cream. It was a family tradition that I had with my father. It was nice. Michael Strahan, former NFL player and TV personality. John Lindorf hosts Colorado's longest-running broadcast food program, Radio Nibbles, Thursday mornings on KGNU. Listen, kgnu.org/category/radio-nibbles. There's a photograph accompanying this article. There's no caption, and it doesn't say exactly who this is, but there's a gentleman with a big smile on his face, leaning over, holding a draft beer in his left hand, and it is overflowing slightly with foam. And it says, courtesy Charlie Papazian. From the film section, Dad Strangelove. Boulder filmmaker shines a spotlight on his father's cinematic legacy. Once upon a time, American letters were full of subversives, satirists, and provocateurs. They made you laugh. They made you think. They changed how you saw the world. The best of them made you uncomfortable within safe spaces and made you feel safe no matter how uncomfortable things got. They helped you grow a thick skin while marveling at beauty in every form. Terry Southern was such a writer. Born in Texas in 1924, Southern would become a versatile essayist, novelist, and screenwriter. His books, Candy, co-written with Mason Hoffenberg, Blue Movie, and The Magic Christian, are coveted by those in the know. But it's the movies that made him a legend. Barbarella, 1968, Easy Rider, 1969, and the painfully funny, eternally prescient Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, 1964. The humor is always humane, Niles Southern says, quoting writer Lewis Lapham's assessment of his father's work. It's not a takedown, and it's not cruel. Stationed in Boulder since the early 1990s, Niall is a writer, filmmaker, and the perennial booster of all things My Father. That's on full display in his 14-minute introduction for the Criterion Channel's collection, Terry Southern, Hollywood's Most Subversive Screenwriter. Along with Niall's spotlight, Criterion's program includes the above plus End of the Road, 1970, and The Magic Christian, 1969. Despite Southern's different levels of involvement with each project and the difficulties trying to retain credit and royalties after they became hits, his singular voice always sings. For Niall, that's evident in the monologues peppering each. You'll also find that in my father's novels, there would be page after page after page, and it's one continuous utterance from a character, and it's often done for effect, Niall says. It's up to individual viewers to decode those. Decoding won't take you long in Dr. Strangelove and The Magic Christian, because they're so funny and absurd, you'll find yourself rewinding just to make sure you caught them the first time. They're also astoundingly contemporary. So are the ones in End of the Road, a lesser-known movie Niall hopes more people discover thanks to Criterion's spotlight. But those bite a little harder. They're still relevant after all these years, but time has done nothing to blunt their force. The culture had reached an apex by the time they were shooting in 1968 when End of the Road began production, Niall recounts. Bobby Kennedy had just been shot, and it really influenced the tone of that film and the kind of existential extremities portrayed in it. Critical of the Vietnam War and violence in general, End of the Road stars Stacy Keach and James Earl Jones at the beginning of their film careers. Each is probing the absolute boundaries of their abilities. Niall says it's like watching a tennis match. End of the Road, for Terry, was supposed to be the beginning of many films he would produce, Niall explains. I think he saw himself throughout the 1970s doing more films like that, that were really pushing the boundaries of what was formally and content-wise politically and socially acceptable. But he did not have the opportunity to make more films after that. Why Southern didn't is one of the questions Niall hopes to answer with a documentary about his father, one he's been nursing along for decades. In addition to interviews with Pablo Ferro, Norman Jewison, Gore Vidal, and others, Niall connects Southern's post-war expat period, the influence of mid-century jazz, the Paris Review, and the Beatles. Southern was immortalized on the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band album. He's nestled between Dylan Thomas and Dion DiMucci in the second row, fifth from the left. There's great depth in Terry's story that covers a lot of cultural signposts, Niall says. Niall has been using the working title Dad Strangelove for the doc, but he's considering changing it to Beauty in Every Form. That line comes from Southern's script for 1965's The Loved One and harkens back to the French surrealist. Niall says, it's about making the grotesque funny or palatable in some way, or astonishing. Criterion Spotlight runs throughout June. If luck has a say, it will forge a whole new generation of Southern fans and spur interest in Niall's documentary. He hopes to finish it in the coming year. On screen, Terry Southern, Hollywood's most subversive screenwriter, is streaming on the Criterion Channel. Want to catch Barbarella on the big screen? The Denver Film Society will be playing it at 12 p.m. June 14th as part of their Science Friction series. There are a couple of photographs accompanying this article. One is from the film Dr. Strangelove, and it has a picture of George C. Scott on the telephone in uniform sitting at a table. There are two officers, military officers, on both sides of him. He has a very serious, almost comical look on his face. And the caption reads, General Buck Turgidson, George C. Scott, learns of a most unpleasant outcome in Dr. Strangelove, courtesy the Criterion Collection. The other photograph shows a picture of Niall and Terry Southern sitting at a table, and they're looking at a document or some picture, and the caption reads, Niall and Terry Southern in Southampton, New York, circa 1968. Credit, Hans Namath. From the events section, June 12th, Country Vinyl Night, 7 to 9:30 p.m. Thursday, June 12th, Velvet Elk Lounge, 2037 13th Street, Boulder, free. Join Evan Holm of Extra Gold as he spins Waylon Jennings, Marty Robbins, Dolly Parton, George Strait, and more country classics. You'll hear the hits plus deep cuts, rare pressings, and cult-following troubadours from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. The picture accompanying that event is basically two colors, pink and red. There is a cowboy hat outlined in red with red spots on it, above a vinyl record that reads Cowgirl Disco. June 13th, Yacht Rock Bingo, 6 to 9 p.m., Friday, June 13th, Village at the Peaks, 1250 South Hoover Road, Longmont, free. Yacht Rock is more than those smooth, breezy Southern California sounds. It's a lifestyle. Show your dedication to the easy listening genre by dressing in your Yacht Rock finest for this recurring themed bingo night. There will be gift card prizes for every game, plus music from DJ rock star Aaron. That event is accompanied by a photograph of two hands holding a bingo card. June 13th, Bigfoot of Boulder County, 8:30 to 10 p.m., Friday, June 13th, Hyle Valley Ranch, 1188 Gear Canyon Road, Boulder, free. Seasoned Bigfoot trackers will keep you safe as you traipse around Hyle Valley Ranch at this family-friendly hunt for the famed cryptid. You'll use proven techniques under the guidance of experts to lure the elusive creature. Organizers promise other fun, interpretive Bigfoot stuff, registration required. That event is accompanied by a picture with a beige or tan background that depicts Bigfoot walking along. He's carrying a hiking stick, and he has on a backpack. Thank you for joining us for the Boulder Weekly, read by Bill Bass.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.
The content featured in this recording may not reflect the views of AfterSight or the presenter. For questions, concerns, or editorial feedback regarding the Boulder Weekly, contact letters at boulderweekly.com or call 303-494-5511.